Hello, and welcome to Crash's Course. This was a series that I was doing for a while where I was giving GM tips and tricks. Before that, it was DM tips and tricks, but I branched out for reasons. And I am bringing this back because there have been some developments in Cypher System, a game that I really enjoy. So, wow, that music did not fade out. It just cut out right there. Right. We are doing this live. Well, not live technically, but I am not editing this in post, let's put it that way. So let's get into this. This week, as of when I'm recording this, Monte Cook Games put out the backer kit version of the Cypher 2nd Edition, or Cypher 2, as they might want to call it, character rulebook. Now, this was, at the time I'm recording this, also my last week of the school year, and I'm a teacher. So this has been percolating for a few days. I do want to go over some of these things and work out my thoughts for this, and I figured might as well make this be a video. So let's take a look at some information. But first of all, elephant in the room, if you are watching the video of this, and there is video of this that I'm going to be putting on PeerTube and Patreon, because those are places where I want to put video. The video will not go on YouTube. I will not be posting the art in this video. The art is amazing. Monte Cook Games tends to hire great artists to create the art they put in their various books. However, I am skirting the lines of fair use to go over these things. The Cypher open license does allow for some leeway, I think, but I'm not sure how much that applies to this new version. I'm assuming it applies. So I just want to make sure that I don't blatantly cross any lines by sharing the art that was commissioned to put in this book. You should get the book. The art is amazing. The book is amazing. I have some misgivings, but I'm going to get into those in this video. So I am trying not to violate copyright. That's basically what this is about. Now, starting with stuff that's actually in the book, this quote that you can see in the video, but I'm going to read it because it's an audio-based format for some of the venues where this is going to be, is from Monte Cook in the introduction. What you're reading now is absolutely a new edition. So this is not the next revision of the Cypher System Red Book. It is a new edition. It is not the Red Book. It is Cypher System 2nd Edition, to be precise, although we just call it Cypher now. So no more Cypher System System. It's just Cypher, and like the D&D system or GURPS system, although I think the S in GURPS is for system, so that would still be redundant. It's just Cypher. If you're looking for a name to distinguish it, I hear the cool kids call it Cypher 2 or just C2. Well, that rules me out because I'm not a cool kid. I am neither of those things. But your mileage may vary. And that is the quote from Monte Cook Games with, well, from Monte Cook of Monte Cook Games, with some heavy editorializing by me because I cannot leave well enough alone. So in a nutshell, yeah, this is a new edition of the book. The old has passed away. Behold, everything has become new. And you can still probably shoehorn the old stuff in certain ways, but in other ways, that's not going to work. For example, the genres. There are now just four genres. And imagine an asterisk after the word four. There's the real world. There's fantasy. There's science fiction. And there's superhero. Those are the four. However, you can fit horror into any of those. So you could say four, but you could kind of lean towards eight, maybe. And also, there is the opportunity of adding magic in. So you could have science fiction with magic. You could have the real world with magic, so modern fantasy. These options exist, but a superhero setting with magic is still a superhero setting. So in that regards, they're saying these are the four genres. There are more genres currently in the Red Book version of Cypher System. If you just look in that book, there's more genres. And that's before you look at all of the additional books that they've put out, like Rust and Redemption or It's Only Magic. Those are great books that delve into various genres a lot more than the Red Book does. But now they're limiting it down to just four. And that's going to be an ongoing trend in this overview, where a lot of the things where there was a lot of something, now there's less of it. And overall, while I can lament the loss of features, I think right now, having played Cypher System for a while and looking at Cypher, I think they needed to do this. I think they really needed to do this. The reason is, as my campaign for Cogworld is going on, we have characters getting up to tier 4. At the time I'm recording this, I believe all of the current characters are tier 4. And the players are running into balancing issues. And I don't mean, oh, this character is more powerful than that character. That will always happen, because balancing all characters to be evenly matched in a TTRPG is foolhardy. I don't think that should be done. Some people will argue that it can be done, but I don't think it should be done because, well, I don't play the game that way. The balance issues that I'm talking about are, there are certain abilities that my players are looking at where there's another ability that's tier 1, and they're looking at a tier 4 ability, and the tier 4 ability is worse but costs more points to use. Well, then what's the point of that ability? There's too many redundancies, and these are things that could have been caught with enough playtesting. But Monte Cook Games is not Paizo. Monte Cook Games is not Wizards of the Coast. They do their playtesting. They definitely do playtesting. But they are a much smaller company. Do I love them as a company? Absolutely. But they're also a much smaller company. So as someone who has made my own TTRPGs and then gone back later and said, how did I not catch that? I can't really look at a small company and blame them for not catching things. And by simplifying what they have currently, this is allowing them to do more playtesting with the stuff that's there to catch these things. Now, do I think some of the balance issues with various powers and abilities come from releasing one of the genre books later on and not comparing the abilities in that book to the abilities in all the other books? Yes, but I don't think that was the only reason. There was also some power creep that was happening where later books were doing additional things with the foci and the descriptors that made those more powerful than foci and descriptors in previous books. So this is giving them the opportunity to fix those things. Now, on the other side of the spectrum, some people have been wondering, I know because I've heard the conversations, and I've thought it myself, why are we taking the Red Book and replacing it with two books? Why do we need two different books? Is this just another money grab? This is a concern that I had specifically because I am one of those people who bought the Spelljammer books. I bought the box set for Spelljammer because I love the concept of the Spelljammer campaign setting. I got the second edition version and shoehorned it into fifth edition years before the fifth edition version came out. I have some misgivings about some things that they then retconned and changed because there was a lot of backlash about it. Mike Shea from Sly Flourish, if I can speak properly, he made a very good point where when you bought the box set, you paid a lot of money for a lot of cardboard. They split the different, they split the information, the content in the box set for Spelljammer into a bunch of smaller books and then put them all in the box. But every one of those books had a cover, which made them feel more substantial. They could have put it all in one book and saved them publishing costs and brought down the cost of the box set, but they did not do that. So, was this splitting into two books a money grab? Well, if you're watching the video, you can see the rebuttal for this already, and you've been seeing this the entire time I've been talking about why two books. So the red book was 450 pages. Just the character rule book, none of the GM stuff is being mentioned here, just building the characters and talking about the genres, which you kind of need to do to build the characters, that itself is 322 pages, well over half the size of the red book. So we're getting more stuff out of it. And this is after they pared down a lot of the stuff for character creation. It's still 322 pages. Why is that? We'll get to that, but primarily it's because of genres, even though there's fewer of them. Now, let's go over some of the changes. I'm not going to be going over everything that's in the book, not by a long shot. If it's 322 pages, this video would be way too long for me to do that, I assure you. But I want to go over some of the changes that stuck out to me as I was skimming through the backer kit version of the C2 character book. First and foremost, wounds. So instead of taking damage directly to your pools, you now have a wound system. I have mixed feelings about this. Anything we're doing that adds more complexity to a game, and at higher levels, it can be very complex. At lower levels, it's super easy. My students, when I do my after-school club, can get right into Cypher. Like, we'll do character creation on day one with the session zero, and we are playing the game by session one, our second meeting. This adds more to it, but this is going to probably encourage my players in my home game to spend their pool points more often. There's still some stuff that mentions it in the rule book. I didn't post a screenshot for that, but there's still some stuff in the rule book that says there's times where a character still might take damage to their pool specifically, but otherwise it's just a resource for using abilities as opposed to, and when you take damage, you're taking damage to this pool also. So they don't need to have a ton of a speed pool just in case they're going to take speed damage. Now, they still might want a might pool that's kind of large because of this new ability they have called rallying, which is in addition to recovery rules. They're still going to have the recovery rules. That's still there. You're still rolling 1d6 plus 1 from what I've seen. But in addition to that, you can spend an action to rally, and that's going to, with spending some might points, heal the character also. So that can be useful. Now, the wounds are going to be three categories: minor, moderate, and major. Minor, you're looking at scuffs and scratches, bruises, something minor, hence the name. Moderate, you're a bit more beat up. Major, you've got like fractures and stuff. So those are serious conditions. And if you take too many minor wounds, then the next minor wound becomes a moderate wound. Same thing with moderates going on to major. And by default, you have a certain amount that you can take of each. But depending on your character build, you might be able to take more of certain ones. And the character sheet allows for this. All right, on to the next thing. And for this, I'm using a screenshot because I could not be bothered to type all this out or copy paste it properly. So this is another new change. There is a core character. This is the default type. If you're not playing any other type, this is the type that you're using, the core character. So you've got, as a start, you got flat 8 for might, speed, and intellect. You still get the 6 points to allocate however you want between those three pools, but you don't have any more the adept, the speaker, the warrior, depending on the genre, you don't have the warrior, the explorer. Those types don't exist as a you can put these in every genre type anymore. Those are thrown out the window. Depending on the genre, you're going to have various types available to you. If you're playing in a modern setting, you don't have those at all. They're all just core characters. You're still going to have an effort of one. you are still going to have a limit of 2 ciphers because it was Adept that got 3 ciphers. You can freely use light weapons, but that was true for all types previously, so that's not changed. Cannot freely use any armor. I suppose there's certain things that you might get that allow you to do that. Otherwise, you're going to be taking penalties for wearing the armor. You get 2 genre skills. So there's a list of skills for each genre that are suggested, and you take 2 off of the list. The GM might allow you more options depending on the situation, but, and still, my understanding is skills for Cypher compared to Cypher system are still kind of loosey-goosey, where if you come up with a better name for a skill, a better type of skill that fits your character better, so long as the GM's okay with it, you're just penciling it in. And there are some optional rules here about having additional genre skills I'm not going to get into in this video. It's going to be long enough as it is. And you get a basic starter kit of some appropriate clothing, enough extra cash to pay for a moderately expensive item. Yes, they're still doing inexpensive, expensive, really expensive, etc. And a set of basic equipment from the genre you are playing in. So if you are playing someone who is, in fact, a medic, you might have a first aid kit on you. If you're playing a security guard, you might have a taser on you, etc., etc., etc. So that's the core character, the summary of it at least. And I like this. One of the complaints that I received, and this is, I'm not going to call it an argument. Beth from my home game and I have a disagreement about whether or not Cypher system can do stuff that isn't magical. Beth insists that Cypher is inherently here is magic because of various foci and powers and stuff. Like, if you are playing an adept, certain abilities that the adept can get are inherently built towards, oh, I'm a magical character. Now, my argument is you can flavor things so that, oh, you are doing that because you have this technology. And I frequently invoke the rule that sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. Beth disagrees. And every now and then we have this discussion and we are agreeing to disagree on this. In Cypher or C2 or whatever you want to call a new version, you've got this, which is inherently not magical. So unless the GM actively approves it, you are not able to make a magical character. Now, next up, let's talk about briefly some simplifications. For example, 33 descriptors exist in the new book. That's down from 50 in the red book. So that is a notable decrease. There's still a bunch here. 33 is not anything to sneeze at for making your sentence to build your character. And there's a lot here. It's a full gamut, but it's not nearly as many as there was in the red book. And once you add in all the other genre books, well, that was even more descriptors that you had available to you. But now we're just down to 33, which I think next time I'm doing my after school club is going to make character creation way easier, because the students have less to look at. There were times when I just asked, okay, what kind of character you want? And I sat down and built the character for various members of the after school club, because that was going to get us rolling dice faster than having them look through every one of those 50 descriptors. That was just too much. Well, I didn't have them look at 50. I did truncate the list based on the genre, but you get the idea. Moving on, I have a typo in this next slide. It says descriptors, but that's supposed to say foci. So we have 42 foci. That is less than half of the foci that were in the red book. There were 92 in the red book. Is this still a lot of foci? Yes. And depending on the genre, you're not even going to be using all these, because some of these are inherently magical or supernatural. And if you're playing in a setting like maybe a hard sci-fi setting, if you cannot make the argument that the GM agrees with, that sufficiently advanced technology is letting you do this thing, then that's going to be off the table and you've got even fewer descriptors available to you. But my argument again is by paring this down, it's allowing Monte Cook Games to do a better job with their playtesting to avoid things that people in a game where they're starting to get to tier 4, tier 5, maybe even tier 6, aren't going, oh wow, why do I even have this ability? Now, in my home game, how we're solving this? Lots of homebrew. We're rewriting things. The Red Book even has suggestions for how to rewrite foci and descriptors and stuff like that. Homebrew is inherently and implicitly and in writing, some of that is redundant, permitted and even encouraged. But it's kind of nice when you don't have to homebrew. One of the things that drew me to Cypher System, away from D&D, besides some stuff that we're just going to point to the soapbox over there about D&D from a few years ago. And now that we've acknowledged it's there, we're going to ignore that for now because this video is going to be long enough as it is, as I've said. And it gets longer every time I say that. Was when I was doing my after school club and Cypher was new to me, my students would say, well, I'd like to play a character that does this, or that looks like this, or is actually this. And previously, I was like, well, okay, yeah, I have some experience homebrewing stuff in D&D. I can make that work. In Cypher System, I didn't have to homebrew. I just used the books, or in most cases, the one book, the Red Book, and they had a character that worked. And now that my home game is getting up to tier 4, we're homebrewing more. And if you have to do that, then there's gaps in the game. Now, when you get to the various foci, and no typo on this one, they have everything written out in a similar way to how the Red Book from Cypher System does it, but they also include a flowchart for each foci, which again is probably helping to add to that page count. But this is interesting because there's some abilities and powers in the various foci where you would read through and say, wow, this is super neat, and then realize you probably shouldn't get that one because you had to have gotten a tier 1 power first for the tier 2 power or tier 4 power to be relevant to you. And okay, well, that rules it out. The flowchart is a visual guide to suggesting, all right, if you're getting this one, then a likely choice for your next tier power is going to be this or this, or this, this, and this, or just this one would work. And I think that's going to really help a lot of people when they are leveling up from one tier to the next, or even looking ahead. There is one player in my home game where what they will frequently do when they're building a character is they will in advance plan out what abilities they're going to be picking in the future. Now, does this change because the character direction has changed because of plot shenaniganery? Absolutely. But they still like to plan things out, and I'm thrilled that they do that. Now, a quick look at part of the Cypher character sheet. I'm not going to go over everything again. Some things are the same. Might be an intellect if you're looking at the new character sheet compared to the old one. That portion of it looks exactly the same. I always shoehorn in a luck pool as well. I have blatantly stolen that from Tales of the Valiant because I like their luck system. It really lets my players fail forward. I enjoy using that as a system. In the character sheet, you can also see a spot for the wounds. So normally, default, you can take 3 minor wounds, 3 moderate wounds, and on your third major wound, they actually have a little skull icon to say, hey, you check off this one, you're dead. So you probably should have used some rallying or other things earlier on to help yourself out. Now, they have more than 3 boxes for minor and moderate, simply because some characters, based on how they're built, will be able to take more minor wounds or more moderate wounds or both. So those are there, but they're bolded or in dotted lines just to point out, hey, this might not actually be a thing that you have available to you. But the others, the 3-3 and technically 3, but you don't want to check that third box ever. Unless it's a really awesome way to go with a heroic ending where everyone's saluting at the end with tears rolling down their faces. Perhaps. Well, you get the idea. Another thing that's neat to point out in here for it, type in the sample character sheet that they give us, it lists Monk. It looks like they have blatantly taken the class names from Dungeons and Dragons. I'm not surprised, considering the godforsaken setting, which is the genre for fantasy, even has Dragonborn in it. But they took those and applied those with a Cypher Monte Cook Games flair to them and put those in the book. And I'm not going to go over any of those in this video. The video version is almost 30 minutes now. The audio only version I'll probably truncate down by getting rid of silences and stuff. For the video, that's going to be harder to do, so I'm not doing that. But I like that they're doing that, even if that does make the book larger, because they can't just talk about three types and be done with it. They've got more than three types, and each genre has their own types, except for modern world, because modern world doesn't have any, but I repeat myself. And there is also in the screenshot I have, and this is just the top left corner of the character sheet, you can see the section for recoveries, where you still have a one action, 10-minute, 1 hour, and 10 hour checkbox for your recovery rolls. You don't lose any of those as options, you still have them available, but also, you have Rally, so you can spend some might points to also do a little bit of healing. Right. Next up, and this is the last thing I want to talk about for stuff that's directly from the book before I give some final thoughts. Actions. Before it was just you have an action. Now you can take an action and move, but you got to make a speed roll in order to manage it. Now you got first actions, which you do before the other actions are taking place, if you're doing one of those actions. You also have a main action, which you can't do some of these if you took a first action that makes that other thing not available. And you also have a last action, where if you're doing this on your turn, you gotta wait for everything else to go on. Now, this is in addition to rolling for initiative. So it's a lot more complicated now, isn't it? I, of all the things that we've got going on with these changes, I don't like wrapping my head around this one. Do I think it could make the game better? It could. It also makes it way more crunchy. It makes it more complicated. And I don't like Cypher for it being complicated. I like it for being simple and customizable without having to customize a lot of stuff. So I might house rule my home games to not deal with three different categories of action. I might just do the way Cypher System does it because it's simple and I understand it and I can devote my brain power to deciding what the BBEG is going to be doing instead of, okay, first action, last action, and can I trust the players to handle this? Almost certainly, usually, yes, especially my home game. My home game, my players are awesome. My students, they're middle schoolers. So if I'm trying to teach them the system and they got all the other stuff going on in their lives that involves being a middle school student, I'm not sure I really want them to have to memorize all of this and figure this out and decide when they can do what when. Now, some final thoughts. Am I gonna be playing Cypher or Cypher 2 or C2 or whatever you want to call it instead of Cypher System? There's a lot of D&D players where when the new version of 5e 5.5 came out, decided, nope, I'm going to stick with 5.0 or 2014 D&D or whatever you wanted to call it. I am going to go to Cypher 2 when the GM book comes out. I am 100% in favor of doing that. I would also like to see an updated book with all of the NPCs and creatures. I believe, if I remember correctly, that's not going to be in the GM guide, but I could be wrong. I've got to double check, so don't quote me on that one. But I think this is, moving forward, pretty good. Am I going to change my current campaign over? No. No, that one is, we are well past the halfway point, unless my players make some choices that really surprise me, which they've done in the past, but I don't see them making choices that's going to make this not be past the halfway point. And looking at the options that are here, because they simplified things, there are certain options that are no longer available, which means they wouldn't be able to just translate their characters well into the new system. Now, could some of them do it? I'm sure some of them could, but I don't think all of them could. And if one of my players runs into that problem, I'm not going to tell them too bad, so sad. We ran into the same issue playing 5th edition Dungeons and Dragons when the fiasco that will not be named occurred, and I was looking at other systems. We couldn't one-to-one translate the characters they had, and we had Warforged, we had Tabaxi, we had Tiefling, we had, I'm forgetting the name of that particular species, but the psychic people from Eberron. We couldn't make those characters in Cypher system. We could definitely not make those characters in Tales of the Valiant. Oh, but Crash, Gearforged exists. Yes, but they didn't make Gearforged for Tales of the Valiant. They made Gearforged for 5e, and I couldn't shoehorn it in to Foundry VTT based on what was there for Tales of the Valiant. If we were doing pen and paper, perhaps, but we weren't. So we could not do that well without abandoning those characters. So I didn't make the change for that either. So, in a nutshell, not changing over the current Cogworld campaign, but there is a chance that in the next Cogworld campaign, that will be running Cypher 2. And the book that I'm working on, which is the campaign setting for Cogworld, that is a thing that I want to release. I'm going to have to go through that and convert the whole thing to C2. I'm not really going to be that upset by this, because this also gives me the option, because you'll notice when I went over the different genres that are here, steampunk isn't one of them. Now, you could make a good argument for it being fantasy or science fiction, depending on how you're interpreting steampunk. But it's really a different thing with bits from both of those. So I like the idea of being able to create my own genre. Okay, not really my own genre, because steampunk exists, but creating my homebrew steampunk genre and then putting that out as a book that people can download. And all the content that I make is pay what you want, so download for free, basically. That's not happening for quite some time because I'm going to need some brain power to do that. And I have other things on my to-do list for using up my creative energies. But that is also in the works. So let's get to the end of this. The ending. We are playing this out. So let's see if I can turn up my volume for my music. There we go. So all this stuff gets put up on my website, aaronbsmith.com. It gets there sooner or later, depending. That's where you can get RSS feeds to all the content that I make. So every podcast has its own. You can email me at cogwheel@aaronbsmith.com. I'm on the Fediverse, so far as the TTRPG stuff is concerned, in two different places. We've got is.aaronbsmith.com/@cogwheel, and we have, for Patreon stuff, video stuff, we've got tube.fediverse.games/c/cogwheel. And that's a mouthful. I need to just take the link to that and put it on aaronbsmith.com. That's going to happen. Summer vacation for me started today. So that is going to happen. I do need to overhaul aaronbsmith.com. That is going to happen. I do have a Patreon. Speaking of Patreon, although before I misspoke, patreon.com/cogwheelgaming. Help us keep the lights on, along with other illustrious patrons, including Ellie, Liv Droman, Paul, Walter, and Patron Emeritus Cindy. And last but not least, I gotta go over some of the legal stuff. So, just real quick, this product is an independent production and is not affiliated with Montecook Games, LLC. It is published under the Cypher System Open License, found at http://csol.montecookgames.com. Cypher System and its logo are trademarks of Montecook Games, LLC in the USA and other countries. All Montecook Games characters and character names, and the distinctive likenesses thereof, are trademarks of Montecook Games, LLC. Additionally, as I hit my microphone, Bubble Machine by Drozerix is licensed as public domain and can be downloaded from modarchive.org. All parts in this video that can be owned by me, Aaron Crash Smith, which is pretty much my takes on things as opposed to anything else, are released under a Filthy Human Hands 1.0 license. More information on that can be found at whirling.top/FHH. And on that note, thanks for listening or watching, depending on what you were doing. Have fun.